Always love talking basketball with NBA insider and contributor Bill Herenda. Hey, before we get into the hoop stuff, what about your perspective on the fire down there and the safety of your family?
Yeah, well, thankfully, Dave, we're good. And, you know, certainly my heart goes out to everyone that's been affected by the fires down here in L.A. and up in Northern California as well. And I think it just reinforces the fact that first responders are true heroes, and just so much respect for them, and just keeping positive vibes for their safety as they fight to protect us. And I think, like anything else, it's just another reminder as well to just be prepared at all times, because, as you know, California is a great state, but just with power, fire, earthquakes, it's just best to be prepared. And certainly, again, wishing the best for everyone that's been affected.
Now, this might be my last podcast for a few days anyway, since being threatened with a potential blackout. So I need to get this one done before everything goes out here.
Well, you know what, Dave, that's, again, great to be with you. And let's get after it then, for sure.
All right, sounds good. Let's start with the defending Western Conference champion Warriors, who finally picked up a win over New Orleans. And they made a change to the starting lineup, going small ball, using Jordan Poole, the rookie out of Michigan, who had been 2-for-12 on threes and 3-for-22 overall, but he made three threes in the first quarter.
Well, you know what, Dave? Listen, I would never put a ceiling on what any player and what any team can accomplish. And I think, you know, you have to add the caveat at this juncture of the season that it's still so early. And, you know, I think what can't be missed with Golden State is the effect of not having some veteran guys due to injury. Of course, Klay Thompson, but even guys like Alec Burks, Willie Cauley-Stein, Kevon Looney, who's played in a limited fashion. They've got, what is it, 9 players that are 23 or younger. So certainly their defense has been, to me, the steak, the offense, the sizzle. And that's an area that I'm sure Ron Adams and Steve Kerr are certainly focused on improving. Because, you know, again, it's very early, but when you look at their defensive rating being at the bottom of the NBA, that's something that's got to improve. And I'm optimistic for the Warriors that it will.
In fact, I remember the first night watching Charles Barkley tell Klay Thompson to his face, "Hey, you're not making the playoffs because you can't score enough." But really, for me, and you just mentioned the defensive end is where they've been a sieve so far.
True. And that, to me, it'll be very interesting to see how the season plays out, because you could just see Charles getting all kinds of heat from the Warrior Nation,
right?
If they turn it around. So, hey, listen, I think it's great TV. It's great entertainment. But there's as you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And sometimes I think people can think that defense can be oversimplified, which it can, ball, you man, all of those fundamental principles. But to truly have cohesion and guys knowing their roles and knowing their assignments and knowing your personnel, the KYP, that takes time for that to get reinforced systemically throughout a roster. So the good news is that you've got time to do that. And also you've got players that are getting minutes now, like you mentioned, Poole, and there are others now, Pascal Spellman, that are getting maybe more minutes with the injuries to the guys we've already talked about. So that may make you better down the road. But certainly, you know, let's face it, it just hasn't been pretty. They took care of business last night in New Orleans, as you'd expect, with a bevy of injuries on the Pelicans squad. And again, tomorrow night will be very interesting to have Phoenix in that matchup, because, of course, they have been terrific and one of the surprise teams here very early in the season.
The heartbeat of the team, of course, is Draymond Green. Had a big-time triple-double, and he got a lot of attention from the day before, saying, "We effing suck," after the loss at OKC. Here's how he responded the next night after the win in New Orleans.
We're still not a very good team. We have a lot of room for improvement. Just because we won one game doesn't mean we don't suck right now. We still have a lot of improvement to do. You know, when I said we suck last night, I see a lot of people blew it out of proportion. A lot of former players who ain't never let shit blew it out of proportion. We sucked. And we're still not very good. But, you know, I've actually know how to lead my entire life. So, you know, those that have never led shouldn't probably talk about leading. But, you know, we just got to continue to get better. We got to continue to compete at a high level. First two nights we didn't do that. Tonight we did. But we still have a lot of room for improvement. You know, some people look at that as a negative. Depends on how you want to look at it. It's a negative or a positive. But you know, I know this team got a lot of improving to do, and we plan on doing it. But right now, we're not a very good team. That's just the fact of the matter. We probably got seven guys under 3 years of experience. You know, so getting those guys' experience under their belt, and you know, as leaders of this team, we continue to try to bring it every night and get them something to follow, and you know, we'll win some games.
That's Green barking back to critics like Richard Jefferson, Gilbert Arenas, and Kendrick Perkins, who criticized Green for the way he acted after the Game 2 loss, the effing suck remarks after the OKC defeat. What do you make of all this, Billy?
Well, I think what you have to like about that is just the realistic approach that Draymond Green is taking. And I think that's key, because just to have that recognition and to not kid yourself, I think as a leader in that locker room, I think that's something that's healthy. And to have the perspective that, okay, it's one win and we've got a lot of room here for improvement, I think is really good. Because I think that's the first step to getting better, is the acknowledgement that there is a lot of room for improvement on both sides of the ball for Golden State at this particular juncture. So I would welcome that. I'm sure that Steve Kerr and the coaching staff and his colleagues feel the same way, and that'll probably permeate the locker room. It's got to be about improvement and getting better each day.
What about some of those guys that you mentioned, the nine that are 23 and under? And I love the guys that played a few years in college. They have some veteran experience from the collegiate level, like Spellman and Pascal. You know, they come from a great system in Villanova.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they're winners. Jay Wright is a terrific coach. There's so many guys, Villanova guys in the league. And I think, you know, Dave, to link these questions together, the way that Draymond Green is not making any excuses, if you notice when you listen to him, zero excuses. And the fact that they have young players, okay, you know, we get that. But you know what? There are young players in the league that are terrifically talented. You know, guys like John Morant, who's been, you know, absolutely fantastic. Luka Doncic. We could go on and on. So youth in and of itself is not an excuse for not performing. Now, every roster is different. Those guys have had the beneficiaries of being in a system for a year now. I know you have close ties to Lloyd Pierce and Atlanta Hawks, and what a great job they've done early. And Doncic now with Porzingis being paired there, and we've got you know, a lot of roster turnover with the Warriors. You know, what is it? The number is about 40% with the league. So I would just encourage people to look at that. Yes, young, learning, improving, but not an excuse, because there are young players in the league that are 23 and under that are thriving. I've been very bullish on D'Angelo Russell. I thought that was a great acquisition for the Warriors. I think he'll fit in quite well there. But again, I just kind of, this may sound contradictory. It's early. Yes, that's the caveat. Even keel, not too high, not too low. Marathon, not a sprint. But you certainly don't want to be complacent. You don't want to be desperate at this stage of the game. It's so early. But you also want to acknowledge that, okay, yes, we are going to cohesively work every day at getting better.
If you had to guess, how many games would it take before you really have an idea about what you have?
I think it takes about 20 games to really know what you've got. And listen, I think the intangibles that you're looking at, you know, really boil down to chemistry, accountability, cohesion, and then you get more to combinations, rotations, and playing groups. So I think it takes about 20 games to really understand what you've got. And again, it could be very striking and very different as we get into December than the view we have right now. But again, I think there are, you know, at least a half dozen teams to 8-9 teams that could win the championship. And there have been so many surprises early in a positive way, and then also you know, in a negative way thus far this season. You know, from Minnesota to Dallas to Phoenix to Miami, and Jimmy Butler hasn't played yet but will play tonight. So it makes it, to me, it just makes the NBA even more fascinating as we see these teams progress, and some that you would not have expected to progress.
What about surprises in a bad way? Sacramento 0-4 for the first time since 08-09 after the loss to Denver on Monday.
Yeah, well, for the Kings, I mean, I think it starts with defense, and their, you know, margin is the worst in the league, you know, minus 19.5 through four games. And just some of the energy and effort that just didn't appear to be there in some of their games, particularly in Utah. Now, they bounced back and played hard against Denver last night. But you know what, Dave, I tweeted this out too yesterday. You know, winning teams, it was amazing last night because we had teams. Utah won on the road in Phoenix, shooting 38%, 32% from three, and overcame 23 turnovers. Denver won in Sacramento, shooting 37% and 28% from three. So what you're seeing is teams that have cohesion and, you know, the bulk of the roster, their core groups remaining intact, that are playing well. And I think in Sacramento, what you've got is, okay, you're without Willie Cauley-Stein, who's now in the Bay Area, and you've got Dedmon, and Rashawn Holmes was terrific last night. So you're trying to figure that out. You've got the dynamic of Buddy Hield signing a huge extension. Where does that leave Bogdanovich? You know, you gave Barnes big money. You're going to have to pay Bagley, who's out and injured right now. And then also you're going to have to pay Fox. So how does that dynamic work with Bogdanovich? And then you've got a new coach and a new system where Jaeger had them on a good trajectory, was a terrific in-game coach, ran great stuff offensively. So for Sacramento, certainly this is a surprising start. And again, never too high, never too low. But when you look at where they are from a pace perspective, you know, they're towards the bottom of the league, but how do you play with pace when you're not defending and you're not controlling your defensive glass? It's tough to do that. So they certainly have a lot to work on.
The players were saying that last night. We want to push the pace, but also our defense is so bad, it's hard to run when we're playing like this at the other end.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you know, you're not defending, you're not turning your opponent over. You are turning it over. So it's clear why you can't play with pace, but the question is, how are you going to clean these things up? And also, I think the playoffs reinforce to me that, yes, okay, we all get it. We understand that the highest shots from an efficiency standpoint are free throws at the rim, the corner three, the above the arc three, and then the mid-range game. Okay, we get that, but there are times when you simply need to score and you need a basket. And what do you have in your half court setting? And I think that's something in Sacramento in particular that you've got to execute. And you know what, Dave, just as we said, when you're not shooting well, how do you win? And we saw that last night again with Utah. Okay, they had 32 made free throws. They converted 16 Phoenix turnovers into 18 points. They were 9-2 in second chance points. How does Denver win? Shooting an anemic number. 19 offensive rebounds, 20-10 over Sacramento in second chance points. And again, they were 19 of 21 from the free throw line. So you have to find, what will you do? What do you have when you're not shooting the ball well that will keep you in games or help you win games? And again, I mentioned some offensive stats, but the defense is vital. It's portable. We've talked about it a lot. It's very rare to have an NBA champion outside of the top 10 in defensive rating. And when you talk about teams like Sacramento, Minnesota, that are trying to get back into the playoffs, Atlanta, you know, you're not talking championship. You're talking about getting into the postseason. But again, still, in this day and age, defense remains vital, but you have to have good balance. And I think that's part of what everyone is trying to figure out right now, what they have with their squads, is what type of balance do they have, positional size and versatility, personnel-wise, and what type of balance do they have collectively, you know, as different playing groups that they're tinkering with.
Bill Herenda, NBA Insider, with us. earlier in this podcast, Bill, you mentioned Atlanta, and that's a team that's close to my heart for a lot of reasons. Trae Young really struggled at the beginning of Summer League a year ago, and there are people actually talking bust after three Summer League games. Really came on over the second half of last year, his rookie season. What about the Hawks and their potential to make the playoffs this year? Doable?
You know, I think they can, Dave. And listen, there's a reason why it's Summer League. You know what I mean? You just cannot take it. You got to take it with a grain of salt. But I think they can make the playoffs. I had them out of the playoffs in my prognostication, but I think they certainly can make it. And, I mean, Young has been fantastic. I mean, you know, he's shooting 51.5% from the floor, 52% from three, 34 points per night. You know, he shoots 81 from the free throw line, 9 assists, 6 rebounds. He's been, you know, absolutely fantastic. And, I mean, you know, when you look at that Young core with Collins – who's, you know, terrific. You know, I like Bembry and his energy, DeAndre Hunter, Herter. They've really got a good core, some good veterans in Evan Turner. You know, Alex Len, who's kind of bounced around a little bit, Jabari Parker. And listen, you've heard Jeff Van Gundy rave about Lloyd Pierce as you watched him with Team USA this summer. That's a franchise that really – is on a good trajectory. Travis Schlenk, some good Bay Area roots there. So I'm definitely bullish on Atlanta, and a lot of people are. And Trae Young is really the provocateur for the Hawks and just emerging as one of the best young point guards in the league.
I remember going back to Lloyd Pierce's days at Santa Clara, and he was a 19-year-old kid out of Yerba Buena High in San Jose that wouldn't even speak. In fact, they recruited him, and one of the assistants said, is he a mute? Because he won't talk. And he's gradually evolved as a young man that could speak. Now I'm blown away by hearing him in his 40s, this educated, this classy, this mature young leader of man. He's still in great shape. He could play a little bit.
Definitely. Hopefully they won't need him. Because the other caveat I think, you know, that we can never neglect is just how important health is. And staying healthy and also having the depth to overcome the inevitable injuries. And you know what? This is something that I think is interesting. UB Brown talks about this. And when you look at getting to the playoffs, what does it take? Okay. Now, if you do the math, let's just say around 500 is going to get you into the playoffs in the East. What that equates to is winning 2 of 3 at home, and then 1 of 3 on the road. If you do that over the course of the season, that's going to put you at about 41 wins. So I think it's just kind of interesting to take a look at things like that and how you would motivate a team, right? And how would you keep them on that even keel, Dave? You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't get too high. We can't get too low. And from that standpoint, that's something as you look at what's occurring, you take a look and say, okay, well, how is this team tracking for the playoffs and can they get that done? And, you know, look, last year it was Detroit in the 8 seed at 41-41.
Give me your top 2 teams in each conference.
I would have to say that it would be Milwaukee and Philadelphia in the East. And then in the West, I would have to go Clippers. And, you know, I'm going to go Denver. Dave, just with their depth and Jokic and Murray and Harris. You know, you look at a guy like Gary Harris, who did a terrific job last night shutting down Buddy Hield, and he was also terrific offensively. I just like the weapons that they have. You know, Will Barton, Michael Porter Jr. is yet to play. Paul Millsap is a veteran. Now, I'm going on and on, but I just think that Denver has a lot of depth. I really like and respect Michael Malone, but the West is stacked. I mean, from Portland to Utah, the Lakers, Dallas is emerging again, in my opinion, as well, and will emerge. But I would, if I had to pick, I would go Clippers and Denver.
You know, one of the biggest stories out of L.A. over the last several months is the reaction to the public of you stealing scenes from Shamar Moore in that episode of SWAT, that you were incredible in that episode. What's the next thing for you acting-wise that you'd like to do?
Oh, you know what, Dave? That was great. What a great experience. And oodles of auditions occurring, and I'm just really just trying to follow the ball and wherever that may lead. So there's a lot of, as you know, there's a lot of work out there with so many different, you know, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, you know, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, in addition to the conventional stuff, that I guess I'm like a free agent, an undrafted free agent that would be delighted to find a good spot that would benefit the team and the production overall, and would keep me busy. So I think that's the beauty of it too, is just to kind of keep an open mind, because it's a very dynamic business, and you just never know. And we've talked about this frequently, like the Jonathan Simmons quote. You know, I stay ready, so I don't have to get ready.
You turned me on to that Jenna Fischer book, which I thought was fantastic, the Actor's Survival Guide. What other types of inspiration do you find out there to give you, whether it's motivation or insights to the business or, you know, things to do?
Yeah, I think it comes in so many different ways. And, you know, I try to read a lot. I try to, you know, look at different quotes and motivational quotes, and I've done some writing as well. So, I mean, they're all over the place, Dave. You know, like just following, you know, people like Ray Dalio on Twitter, you know, pain versus, you know, pain equals progress, and, you know, all types of, I think there's just motivational stuff all out there. So it just comes sometimes in waves. You know, sometimes it's, there seems to be a lot of it, sometimes not as much, but I think we can find it from all walks of life, from people in all walks of life.
Are you at the point as an actor where you can feel good about just the process of auditioning and say, you know what, because that's what Jenna talks about, if I did a good job or I was prepared in there, then I'm happy. It doesn't matter whether I booked the gig or not. It's getting a chance to do it and work on your craft.
Yeah, you know, I can't source this quote, but someone said that the auditions are the vocation, the acting, the vacation. Yeah. And that really resonated with me. And you know what, Dave, the Dalio quote, a pain plus reflection equals progress. I wanted to make sure I got that verbatim. But yeah, listen, I think you cannot get hung up on the results, and you have to really focus on the process, because there could be, you know, a variety of reasons why people get book certain jobs and why sometimes it doesn't work out. And I think it's just a matter of being the best that you can be, and the role will find you. And listen, everyone else is taken, right? You have to be yourself. I think that was Oscar Wilde who said that. And I think that's really true, because you just can't get hung up on the results. And, you know, you're going to have good auditions. You're going to have auditions that miss the mark. And I've had those as well. So it's just about enjoying it, staying in the moment. And the results ultimately will take care of themselves. But it's like anything else. You just can't think and hit, as Yogi Berra said.
That's not just great advice for an actor, but that'd be just a great way to live, wouldn't it? In everything you do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a learned mindset, right? Like Carol Dweck, you know, it's kind of the fixed versus the growth mindset. And if you're not where you're at right now, that's okay. It's back to Draymond Green, Dave. So you know, okay, well, maybe I'm not very good now at memorizing my lines. So I want to go look up Jim Kwik and his tips for memorization. But at the same time, you want to deliver those lines as best as you can, and not in a rote or robotic fashion, but you just got to feel it and think about how the character is, emotes, feels, and you just have to do that to the best of your ability, and not, Tim Capshaw, the Brooklyn Nets radio analyst, reminded me of this quote, comparison is the thief of joy. and that was Teddy Roosevelt. And I think that's so key in this day and age where there's so much noise and social media. And listen, when someone gets a role, celebrate it with them or for them. I mean, there'll be times where I'll see stuff on TV and that, that sounds really familiar. Yeah, that was a role that I was up for but didn't get. But you know what? Good for that person that got it. And, you know, it was their time. They were the better fit. And one of the things that I try to remember and live up to is that the market ultimately dictates success. And sometimes that's a tough reality to face, but we've got to embrace that. And I think, you know, like anything else, over time, there's work for everyone, regardless of your talent, ability, you know, physical attributes, all those things. So you just got to enjoy the ride. And I happen to be one of these guys that really enjoys the chase. And I think that's important too, to really embrace that, because every day is going to be a little bit different and there are going to be highs and lows along the way. And certainly I think it's important for all of us to try to really enjoy those highs, because, you know, you've put in the work, you deserve it. But again, do that, enjoy it, but move on to the next. Stay ready, stay prepared, stay hungry, and try to get better.
There have to be people in your life that just don't get that, though, right? So if you tell someone, I'll just make a name, you know, Aunt Jessica in Iowa, hey, I'm an actor in Hollywood. When am I going to see you on TV? And it's a little different when you're talking about enjoying the process and growing and learning from it, rather than when the people in the outside world say, hey, when am I going to see you in an Academy Award-winning film?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think part of it is that you cannot expect everyone to understand. And, you know, listen, we have a lot of friends, right, that are in the coaching profession, which is quite fickle and dynamic and filled with turnover and highs and lows. So some of those folks may be able to relate more so than folks that maybe have, you know, more conventional careers. But again, I think it's important to have friends that you can rely on, and you can talk through some stuff and that get it. And you get it, Dave. Obviously, you've been a great friend and understand the broadcasting business and the acting business. So I think part of it is just like the expectation. Like, you just can't expect everyone to understand it, and that's okay, you know. But at the same token, I think what it does, at least for me, is that it reinforces kind of the camaraderie of folks that are in the business. And you know, I can go to Starbucks and bump into a buddy who's in the business, and they absolutely get it, and you're able to kind of, you know, talk about what you're both up to, kind of bond a little bit, wish each other well, and then you know, kind of catch up down the road and see what progress and hurdles you've been able to overcome. So sometimes it's just about expectations.
Yeah, and I think you just mentioned something too with the folks you meet in the world, to expand your tribe of creatives, have more folks like that in your life.
Yeah, and I think that's just inevitable. You know, who was it? I think it may have been Brendan Malone. You know, Steve Clifford, the head coach of the Orlando Magic, talks about this, that, you know, or Brendan Sore, but I think it was Michael Malone's dad who said, you know, the biggest influence are the people that you hang out with and the books you read. So certainly I like to look at it as kind of like your diet, and where are you getting your information? Who are you spending time with? All of those things. Cause you just want, you know, positive influences. And certainly you try to be a positive influence on all the people that you interact with. And I think sometimes you have to be just a little bit persnickety when it comes to, okay, I can have this bag of pretzels, all right? That would work. But you know what? These organic hemp seed bars, they may be a little bit better for me. And you know what? Maybe one is better than three.
Yep.
So sometimes less is more. And I think that's also the same type of decision-making we need to make as far as, you know, where we're spending our time, who we're spending our time with, what I'm listening to, what I'm reading, where I'm getting my information. And you know, ultimately, is this fun? Is this making me better? Is this making me smarter?
Well, you've inspired me. I love spending time with you. Hey, I wanted to ask you on the way out, because someone told me about this, that they've been evacuated because of the fires. Do you have a list of things like you would take? I didn't think about this. Like, I need to grab my passport, grab my computer, 3 sets of clothes, the dog. I mean, have that list already determined on what you're going to take with you. That way, you're not scrambling for shit as you leave.
I'm not a big planner, but we've got bags packed and ready to go and copious amounts of water. So from that standpoint, I feel very prepared, Dave, which, you know, I wasn't always that way. But when it comes to this type of stuff, you can see how serious it is, that that kind of forces you to be prepared and to feel some of the earthquakes and see some of these fires. So I definitely feel, you know, prepared. We've got bags ready to go. It's a grab and go scenario if need be. Hopefully it'll get there, but failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So, you know, we've kind of got things lined up and ready to go if need be.
Sounds good. Be safe, my friend.
You too, Dave. Thanks so much.
You can follow Bill Herenda on Twitter at Bill Herenda, H-E-R-E-N-D-A, or BillHerenda.com. You use that handle pretty much for everything, right? Your entire social media?
It is. The eponymous BillHerenda.com, Instagram, Twitter. Yes, Dave. Yeah, that's it.
All right, man. I'll be in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dave.